Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Unfiltered. My name's Ollie Dugmore and my guest today is a footballer. Born in Leeds and raised in poverty by his mother and grandmother, while his father spent recurring stints in prison, he began his professional career as a midfielder at Leeds United, where he was dubbed the Yorkshire Pirlo. In 2020, he started every game for England at the Euros. A big money move to Manchester City followed, but injury has meant nearly no match time. Gareth Southgate says he is a super player, but inevitably it's not a situation that continues forever. His best friend says he's never let the football, the fame, the money get on top of him. My guest today is Calvin Phillips. How are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm very good, thank you.
Good. Glad to have you with us. On Unfiltered, we like to, well, it's a conversation about how the events of your life made you who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, this film you've got coming out, this documentary you've got coming out with Amazon, focuses on all of that. So we'll talk about it a bit today. We like to begin at the beginning. Makes sense. You grew up in Leeds in the 90s and early noughties.
Yeah.
Can you describe what Leeds was like to grow up in as a city?
To be honest, I had a really good childhood from my point of view. My childhood was the best because, you know, my mum made it the best and I had all my friends around me, all brothers and sisters around me and stuff like that. So I had a really good childhood there. As I got older, I knew that, you know, the difficulties that my mum had when, you know, we was younger, being a single mum and working two jobs and me having to always go to my grandma's and grandma having to look after us while my mum was working. Kind of realised that as I got older and yeah, I think me playing football kind of just gave me that firing ability to try and make my mum a lot more proud and kind of just give her a little bit back from what she gave me and you know, to tell her how proud I am about.
I grew up in a single parent household as well, and the thing that as I grew older that I was most impressed with was the way that my mum sort of insulated me from all of that sort of the stress, the pressure that she clearly was under.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess when you're a kid as well, you're not even thinking about mm-hmm. things like that. You're thinking about when you're going to go off and play football next. But one of the things that I was most impressed with, or sort of the things I thank her for most, is always trying to sort of insulate me from the pressure and the stress and the difficulty that she was experiencing at that time. Because I think preserving that kind of innocence of childhood is so important, isn't it, when you're growing up?
Yeah, I think that's one of the main things I praise my mum for as well. I think, you know, to keep us away from all the stuff that's going on and just letting us enjoy every moment that we had together as a family and, you know, with all his friends as well. Yeah, I think, you know, she did unbelievable to do that. And, you know, it was only when, you know, I was turning like 11, 12, 13 when, you know, I'd maybe walk into the kitchen, she'd be a little bit upset and I'd ask her what's wrong. And I seen more signs of that. And, yeah, and then obviously I started playing football, went to Leeds and, you know, just wanted to really push myself to become the best person that I could, not just for me, but for her as well, because of how much she's sacrificed.
Difficult thing, isn't it? As a young lad, you know, being 11, 12, 13, trying to get involved in those I guess, more adult conversations, yes. You know, yeah. Especially because you feel obliged to, you know, I was the oldest man in the house, and you sort of, you're trying to be an adult. You think you're an adult, but you're fucking not.
literally, that's what it felt like. Because obviously, you know, my mum, obviously my dad weren't around at the time and never had that father figure there to help me or to guide me in any way. But my mum basically did both jobs and she helped me do that. And, you know, I try to speak to her and ask her what's wrong, why are you crying? She's just like, oh, nothing, it's fine. It's fine. She'll just be like, nothing, it's fine. Wave it off. And, I just had to look after my brothers and sisters and make sure they was behaving well enough to stop adding more stress to my mum's life. And
were they well behaved?
Yeah, very well behaved. Very well behaved. I think I did a good job of doing that.
Of course you did. tell me a bit more about the family dynamic. You know, you mentioned your brothers and sisters, but also your gran as well.
Yeah, so my grandma's a very special woman, Granny Val. I don't know if many people have seen it, but there's a Lee's documentary out that she was involved in quite a lot in that. And, you know, if you do watch, you can tell what type of woman she is. She was an amazing woman, and she was basically the queen of our family. She had 8 kids, got a very big family. She made sure she had time for every single, you know, grandchild, great-grandchild, daughter, son. So, yeah, she's a special woman, and, you know, she was very funny as well at the same time. So, you know, I can remember she used to, my mum used to always, you know, give each other a little bit of stick when they used to go around, but she used to love them. She was just hilarious, so.
Sense of humour is really important, isn't it? Particularly when you're growing up.
Yeah, especially in our family. I think our family is one of the funniest. I've got some of the funniest people in my family. It's ridiculous, so. Yeah, I think you'll probably see it in a few clips in the documentary how funny some people are. And I think that kind of just extends to what type of people we are. Very, very happy, very loud at the same time, but also very humble as well.
You've got a twin sister. If she was sat there where you're sat right now and I was talking to her about you and she was going to tell me a funny story about you, what would she tell me?
I actually don't know.
You're probably trying to think of one as well that you can actually say.
Yeah, I'm trying to think at the same time, but I actually don't know what she'd say. I think she'd probably just remember some of when we was younger. I don't really know.
How would she describe you then?
Just funny, annoying at the same time. But me and my sister live together. So me and my girlfriend and my sister live together in Manchester. So, you know, I'm very close to my twin sister. She worked from home most of the time, and you know, we spend quite a lot of time together, so there's been times where I've annoyed her on numerous occasions, but I can't really say what I've annoyed her.
Fair enough. It's in the film as well, isn't it? But you moved to Manchester and then your mum moved into your gaff in Leeds, didn't she?
Yeah.
Must be quite nice as well to be able to sort of, you know, have the house that you've paid for from your football and then say, you know, go on, mum.
Yeah.
You have that.
I think that's what, you know, I've always wanted to do. I've always wanted to make sure mum's, you know, secure in her own house, not having to pay rent and stuff like that. And I think, you know, it's the least I can do after the way that she's brought me and my brothers and sisters up. So for me to be able to do that with the job that I do and just to help her a little bit more and help her, you know, be a little bit more stress-free. She loves it, to be fair. She's non-stop gardening now, so
there's quite a funny scene in the doc where she can't work out who's your cooker.
Yeah.
To be fair, like touch on that, isn't it?
It's not even that difficult, to be honest. I don't know how she didn't get it, but yeah, she had a few moments like that in the house where there's blinds in the kitchen as well, and she don't know how to open them. She never knows how to open them. And you know, when it's sunny and when it's warm, it's like a greenhouse in there, so she just goes out and sits in the garden and does garden it, so.
Nice. It's one of the, we interviewed Niall Horan for this podcast, and one of the first things he did was sort his parents out once he got that sort of first paycheck. And, you know, Stormzy talks about it all the time as well, doesn't he? Like taking care of his mum when he got paid for the first time. And I don't, Stormzy, obviously, he's single parent household, I do believe. Niall, less so, but it's, I don't know whether there's just something about when you're a young lad and you've done all right for yourself, the first thing you want to do is sort of like pay it back.
Yeah. I think I've met Stormzy as well. I met him in a concert in Leeds and he seems like a proper good guy, but I just feel like that's what type of people we are. Like when we've grown up, you know, not realising how hard, you know, mothers and stuff have had to work, and, you know, whenever you get the chance to repay them, that's what you do. And, you know, to be fair, I've had a couple houses in Leeds, and, you know, when I moved out of my old house that I went back to in the documentary, I moved out for like 2 years and then bought the house that my mum's in now.
Mm-hmm.
And literally, it's like a domino effect. So every house that I move out to, every house that I say that I'm getting, my mum's like,
she's looking it up on that right move.
Give me the keys. Give me the keys. But to be fair, I don't blame her because she deserves it. So
yeah, too right.
Yeah.
Too right, she does. Your other parent mentioned your intro.
Mm-hmm.
In the intro, your dad,
mm-hmm.
Who was in and out of prison a lot.
Yeah.
In your childhood, what effect did that have on your relationship with him when you were younger?
I don't think it had. It didn't have a bad effect on it because, you know, he's still my father. I still love him, like he's my father as well. So it's just the fact that obviously it was limited time where we'd get to see him and we'd be able to speak to him for, you know, for weeks at a time or, you know, a couple of months at a time. And then, you know, you kind of grow up and you're growing up, all your friends are, you know, with their fathers and, you know, spending time with their fathers, and you've not really had the chance to do so. So, but yeah, obviously, you know, me and my dad have a great relationship. We speak to each other occasionally, and, you know, I went to go see him a couple of months ago, and, you know, he was literally like, he'd never been away because we have that same talk. We speak about football, we have a laugh, we ask how family's doing and stuff like that, and, you know, it's like he's never been away, but obviously, you know, the real picture is that he's been away for quite a while, and, you know, I think he gets out in 2025, 26, and, you know, I said to him, one of my first conversations when I went to go see him, I said, I want to help you when you get out, to be more secure and to not go back into prison. And the one thing he said to me, which you could have asked for anything, he says, literally all I want now, he says, to just travel the world and watch you play football. He says, that's literally all I want. I don't want anything else. Just give me that and I'm happy. So yeah.
That's giving me goosebumps.
Yeah.
You saying that then.
Yeah.
So when you're younger, we were talking about your mum like shielding you a little bit, you know, mm-hmm. from the difficulty that she had then.
Mm-hmm.
So this might sound like a slightly weird question, but did you know where he was? Did you know he was in prison, or did your mum kind of try to protect you from that a little bit when you were younger as well?
I knew times when, obviously when I was younger, we used to go visit him all the time in prison and stuff. But then even when he'd come out, he'd go missing for like, you know, a month at a time and then come back and be black or where have you been? But yeah, I think, you know, there were times where when you'd not seen him for maybe longer than a month, then you kind of knew that he was going back in prison, you'd gone back into prison or whatever. And then I think my mum would just tell us, oh, you know, we're off to go see your dad. He's gone back in prison now. And we'd all just be like, oh, for God's sake. Not again. But yeah, that's, to be honest, you know, this documentary is about me trying to inspire the younger generation, but like it's also, you know, I know that my dad had a very difficult childhood when he grew up, and, you know, his decisions that he's made is from not having a great childhood, and, you know, he went into care and stuff like that, so it's not being easy for him either. So, you know, just, yeah, my dad's a good guy in his own way, and, yeah, I can't wait for him to get out, so.
I think it's important, though, to show that side of things, because, you know, it'd be very easy to just, like, you know, not talk about it, or, mm-hmm. you know, pretend it didn't happen, and actually, it's quite powerful to show people that, you know, life is messy, life is difficult.
Yeah.
It's never as simple as, you know, oh yeah, I just started playing football and made it all the way to the top.
Yeah.
You know, isn't it? Obviously, it's never like that anyway, yeah. But you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's actually, I think, you know, there'll be people who perhaps themselves are in a pretty difficult situation and they see something like that and where you got to in spite of it,
mm-hmm.
can be quite inspiring.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's another reason why I wanted to do the documentary. I wanted to inspire, you know, whoever watched it. I wanted to make sure they felt inspired by, you know, my story, and, you know, no matter where you're from, what situation you've been in the past, what situation you could go through in the future, you know, whatever you put your mind to, if you work hard enough and you have the right people around you to support you, then, you know, the sky's the limit, really.
Mm-hmm. I want to pick up as well on something you mentioned a little bit earlier. You said that you didn't really have a father figure there at the time because he was away. How did that experience sort of impact how you perceive like being a man? You know, if you don't have, you know, dad there all the time to look up to and sort of be like a guiding light, how did that experience change being sort of a positive male role model and that sort of thing for you?
I think it was just, you know, whenever I got a chance to interact with, you know, kids and stuff. And even like me and my girlfriend speak about it now, like whenever we have kids, I'm never going to not be with my kids, you know what I mean? Because I know how I felt when I was younger when, you know, I did see my dad for a few months and stuff like that. But I think, you know, with me, if you ever see me interact with kids and, you know, talk to kids and young fans, like I go out my way to do everything that I can for them because I know exactly how it feels when, you know, you want to say hello to somebody, you want to say hello to like a footballer you see maybe at a shopping centre or something, and then you don't really say it because you're too scared or too shy. So I just try and, you know, speak to them like I'm a normal person because that's what I am. Yeah. Make them feel very comfortable and, you know, just be a highlight of the day. Maybe if they see me, you know, they say, oh, go home and tell a friend, oh, I think Calvin Phillips in. Hey, let me have a picture, he's talked and stuff like that. So I just like to, you know, just show, you know, appreciation for all the fans that obviously look up to me and as a role model and stuff like that.
Mm. I guess the other side of it as well is, yeah, okay, maybe there's not necessarily like that father figure there, but there are plenty of strong women in your life that have sort of, you know, steps, you know, talk about your gran, talk about your mum, what they went through for you.
Yeah.
And that, you know, just because perhaps someone's dad isn't there doesn't necessarily mean that there aren't role models, that there aren't people for them to look up to. And actually, it's sort of the strength of women in doing that is, you know, it's really evident in the film as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, like you see in the documentary, the women are so important in my life. And they've done an amazing job at being both, you know, mother and father figures. And, but for me as well, you know, the father figures that I've had, not father figures, but, you know, somebody who are, you know, not, it's been my head coaches who, you know, I've been playing football under and stuff like that. Like, I've always wanted to make sure I'm doing everything right in my own way so I'm not disappointing them and stuff like that. So whenever I've had a coach for, like, you know, a couple of years, because at least it was changing managers every 2 months, so it was hard to do that. But when Bielsa came in, he was like a granddad figure, basically. I'd do everything possible, you know, obviously to make him happy and make his life easier at the training ground, and I'd always want to impress him. And he's weird, it sounds a little bit weird, but it's like my father figures were kind of coming from, you know, the managers who, you know, I was spending basically every day with at the football ground and stuff like that. So yeah, it's a bit of a weird one, but
I say that, to be honest with you, you know, like people have mentors, you know, people have people they look up to. Sadiq Khan was one of the previous interviews, and he was talking about his head teacher at school, and he stayed in touch with him all the way through, like his life afterwards. I mean, you mentioned Bielsa there. I mean, are there any other sort of people that have played that role, like mentoring you, still present, that you sort of still touch base with, and, you know?
My old coach at Leeds when I was under 18, Neil Redfern. Luce is actually in the documentary. He's somebody that I speak to. There's a guy called Steve Holmes who was at Leeds when I was younger as well, who helped me a lot. And different people from, you know, me growing up who I've kept in touch with. And there's quite a few, to be fair.
Nice.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Let's talk a little bit more about the football side of things then.
Mm-hmm.
What are your sort of first memories, earliest memories playing?
Probably just out on the street more, bro. That's all we used to do. We used to wake up in the morning. If we didn't have school, we'd wake up in the morning. It's the first thing we'd do. We wouldn't even have breakfast. We'd go outside and play football. And then go in. Probably mum would have to go to the shop. We'd be like, oh, come here. We'd get something to eat. Come back. Go outside and play football. And that's literally all it was. Every single day. And then as we grew older and, you know, we got to roam around Leeds a little bit more. And, you know, my best friend Liam as well, he lived, you know, 10 minutes down the road from me, so we used to meet up all near my house and then we'd walk all the way to Kirkstall, which is like probably about an hour walk, meet up with my cousins who live, you know, 20 minutes away, and we'd all meet at that point and go play football again at goals in Kirkstall, and that's literally all we did. We spent hours and hours there, and yeah, it's paid off in a way.
What position did your brother play?
My brother?
Yeah.
My brother's a centre back. He was probably better than me when he was younger.
You're
not gonna lie, yeah, he was really good. He played for Wortley Boys as well. And he was the one all the trophies. He won, you know, leagues, he won tournaments, he won, you know, he had a really good team, and I was like a bit jealous because he was winning all these trophies and stuff like that. But then, you know, as I got older, my trophies started coming a lot more and stuff like that. And to be fair, he actually came to Leeds on trial and then got injured in on trial, so never really went back. But I'd say he was probably better than me when he was younger.
He's going to clip, he's going to take that.
Yeah, 100%.
He's going to be putting that down the family WhatsApp.
It's probably over-egging it a bit much to say that, you know, your career has been based on a rivalry with your brother wanting to get more trophies than he's got in the cabinet. But, you know, those early games and playing with him, playing with Liam, playing with your mates, I mean, you obviously must have enjoyed that process, enjoyed doing that every day, because otherwise you wouldn't be here now, right? I mean, happy memories then, doing all that.
Yeah, unbelievable. That's why I say that my childhood was so good, because that's literally all we did. We had fun all the time, and you know, the times where we go to goals and we'd meet another group of lads who were like maybe 17, 18, I'd be like 14 at the time, and like we'd play against them, and you know, they'd give you a little bit, and then as soon as they see me giving it back, they'd be like, oh, alright then, he's serious about what he does. So yeah, that's what my friends say all the time. Like, I remember playing, you know, all the lads and me not being scared to get stuck in.
That's 50-50 in the game.
They kind of knew that, you know, yeah, he's going to be a good player.
Was there like a rival team that you particularly in the league or anything like that you guys were always wanting to play against? Anyone who stands out?
Farsley Celtic.
Yeah?
Yeah, so it's a team that's not too far from where we was in Leeds. And I actually moved there, though, after I was at... So before I went to Leeds, I moved from Wortley to Farsley Celtic for like 6 months, and then went to Leeds, but... Yeah, they was a team that we'd always... They used to always get, like, you know, the best players. Maybe, you know, been on trial at certain teams and then got knocked back, and they'd get them and win all the leagues and stuff. So we used to love playing against them.
Any standout games that you really remember? Big result?
Not that I can remember. No, there's been so many games.
Yeah,
I don't really remember, but I can just remember, you know, loving... playing against Fazer, like, you always, used to always get stuck in, but used to be so close to getting red cards at the same time. So.
Treading the line. Yeah. No one wants to send off like a 13-year-old kid either, do they? The red doesn't want to send you all.
Yeah, no.
Don't give them a reason to. Okay, so I think you're 14 when you get scouted for Leeds, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
How do you remember feeling when you heard that they were scouting you and they were taking an interest in you?
I was so nervous.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually went to Huddersfield, you know, a couple of weeks before that. I was just trying out, like, different places. And I'd gone to Huddersfield, and I think I spent one day there, and I was like, I'm not going back there. No one was like, what's up? and said, I don't like it there, I'm not going back there, and she never took me back. And then a couple of weeks later, I got scouted by Leeds. So, you know, I think it was like a blessing in disguise, really. But yeah, I got scouted by Leeds, and I can remember I had a friend at the time, Jake, who he was playing for Leeds at the time, and I went to school with him. And yeah, obviously his mum and dad used to help take me to training and stuff when my mum couldn't as well. So yeah, it was hard to integrate myself in the team because some of the boys had been there since like they were 6 years old and stuff. And I honestly, I couldn't imagine, you know, going to an academy at 6 years old because you never get time to enjoy anything because you just literally constantly like try to impress people. Where when I was playing Sunday League, I was just
loving it,
just loving life. So,
Wonder like when a scout like sees like a 6 year old kid playing, like what are they seeing? That do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, this I totally agree.
Than the others,
I totally agree because I just see little kids running around and having fun, like never getting tired.
Yeah,
that's what they were the best days. You just never get tired,
mm-hmm.
And now you do two lengths of football pitch and you're knackered. So,
yeah, you'd love that, like lunch break or whatever at school where you just be absolutely banging it for a full hour,
yeah.
And then again after school and yeah, where's that gone now?
Well, yeah. I don't
know. Tell me a bit more about, you said nervous, you said when you found out there was,
yeah, so
a bit more about that.
Just because I'd never been to like a big setup like that. I'd never been to, obviously Leeds was my favourite team, somewhere I'd always loved to be in. And I think I got a 6 week trial. And I started actually on fire. I scored like six goals in the first four games. And then my 6 week trial finished and they said that they wanted to keep me on. And then I didn't score for the rest of that season. So I think the nervous energy actually did me a little bit of good.
Oh, yeah.
As soon as I got a little bit relaxed, kind of dropped off a little bit and didn't score anymore. So
you're comfy.
Yeah.
What was it like at school? When everyone found out that you were sort of, you know, going off to Leeds, but you said your mate Jake was already...
He's already there.
Already there.
So yeah, it's
not that big a deal, mate, but...
Yeah, he wasn't that big of a deal. He was all right. Like, obviously, you know, all the older lads at school used to, you know, buzz off you because you're sick at footy.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we already had one guy who was already sick at footy at that time anyway, so...
Because I was thinking about it, you know, being like the kid or whatever that gets picked and is doing it.
Yeah.
I was, that's why I asked, because I thought about myself at that time at school, if I was playing for, like, you know, if I'd been scouted by a team, well,
yeah,
that would never have happened. Like, it's not good. But I'm just, you know, the ego on me would be like out here. And then you said earlier that like some other lad had already done it.
Yeah.
Like, oh, mate.
Good.
Yeah, exactly. okay. Let's talk a little bit more about sort of England then.
Yeah.
2020, you make your international debut. When you found out you've been selected, you're going in the squad, who did you call first?
What
was that phone call like?
To be honest, I just can remember just screaming on the phone. But I told her she was absolutely buzzing if she started crying on the phone and stuff, saying how proud she is of me and stuff like that. And you know, I was driving at the time, so I couldn't really, I was literally just on the dashboard like trying to call mum, call mum, call mum. And then after that was my grandma. And after that was my girlfriend, who I've been with for 14 years now. So, you know, I've got people all around me that have been there since day one. And, you know, I wanted to tell all them first. And, you know, the reception that they gave me was just, you know, of how much, you know, everyone's seen me go through, you know, how much I've, you know, wanted to be involved with England and then to be finally called off was for a major tournament was, you know, an amazing feeling. So,
how long are you? When did you and your missus meet then? 14 years.
14. It was 14.
14. Yeah. Okay. What's really striking in that list there? You know, the first three people you called, they're all women.
Yeah.
We were talking earlier about the sort of the power of women in your life. It's clear, isn't it? Right.
Yeah.
Those first three people you go and talk to and tell about it and celebrate it with.
Yeah, 100%. I don't know, it's just literally instinct. I just call people that have been there since day one and and stuff like that. So, yeah, three women straight away.
And you said you're in the car, so does that mean you got the call as well whilst you were driving?
Yeah, I got the call from Southgate, yeah.
What was that like?
It's weird. It's funny though, because I'd got a call from my agent at the time and He said, I think Gareth Southgate's going to ring you. He said, I don't know what for. I don't know whether it's to say that you're going to be involved or if you're not. But just make sure if somebody rings, answer it. And put phone down. I was like, okay, put phone down. And then he started ringing. And I was just sat there. Didn't answer it. Started ringing again. Didn't answer it. And I was like, answered it. And just had a little conversation. And they just said that he'd select me. And I was just like, I was so quick to not even not to get off the phone, but like I was just wanting to scream, you know, while I was on the phone. And, you know, I just thanked him for trusting me and, you know, selecting me. And then as soon as the phone went down, I was just screaming at the top of my voice. So if somebody had had, you know, recording me in that time, they'd be thinking,
what the hell is going on there?
What is he doing?
Is he all right?
Is he singing or is he?
Do you not? I've always, like, where does he get your phone number from? Do you know what I mean? Does the FA just have a list of you all and he just takes it out and he's like, all right, Calvin, I'll give him a bell now?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, when you first get called up for England, you know, they give you all the details are given to, you know, the FA and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think, but it was weird because obviously I had not saved his number, so it came up and I was like, his number. And then I answered it safe.
And does the kind of the communication about England and, you know, whether or not you're going to get selected or like feedback like that, how often are you talking to Southgate, you know, that kind of thing? Or is it just if you're selected, he gives you a bell and that sort of deal?
Yeah, I think especially the first time I got selected, obviously it's the first time I'd spoke to him properly. And that was obviously a special occasion because it was the first time I ever had been called up for England. So that was all right. And then other times, you know, normally you just get a text. You just get a text from the FA, like, oh, that maybe a month before the squad's announced, they'd be like, you're in contention to be involved in the next international break. And then maybe, I think it's the day it's announced, you'll get a text with you're in or you're not, or you're out. And then obviously for major tournaments, you Gareth always rings the players that are involved and even that aren't involved, because I knew when he called me that time and he was telling me that I was involved, I knew that obviously the other lad, some other lads weren't involved, so I was like, oh, I'll let you carry on with your day and
yeah
and stuff like that. So but yeah, it's just the normal routine now.
That must be difficult. Like, I know, you know, a lot of the lads in the England, you're close, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah. Knowing as well, yeah, okay, I might be in the squad,
yeah,
but some there's plenty of other guys who aren't going to be. So it's a weird day, isn't it, that when the full squad gets announced, because some guys, you know, in that case for you, one of the best days of your life,
yeah,
no doubt. And, you know, for other guys as well, like a really rotten day.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And, you know, I was lucky that I was the only player, obviously, in my team that, you know, was playing for England at that time, because I can't imagine, you know, being at City now and, you know, during the World Cup, say if I didn't get selected and, you know, all the other lads have been selected, I'd just be like, oh, welcome, man. Cheers.
Mate, that scene in the film where you're at City and you come to the dressing room and you're like, I'm going.
And then Scott Carson gets up and he's like, let me go check my phone.
He's, honestly, Scott is the funniest guy I've ever met. He's so funny. He's just 24 hours a day, he's just like that.
Yeah.
All the time, yeah.
It's important having characters like that in the dressing room, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, you know, for Scotty as well, I think, you know, he's somebody that people look up to just because of how he is, how he just acts every single day. And, you know, he works so hard as well. He works so hard, and, you know, he playing time's very limited. He knows that. And but the way that he helps players when you're not involved, like this year, Scotty's been like one of the best people for me to, you know, to be around, because he's always gives 100%. And say, like, all the other lads are on recovery who have played, you know, lads that are substitutes, they have to go out and train together, and, you know, you could feel like shit, and you'd be like, happy ass, I don't want to do this. But then Scotty would be like, come on, you need to carry on going, and then, you know, whatever Scotty says, you got to do. So.
It's like, he's a proper pro, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's experience, isn't
it?
That,
yeah.
That tells. So, I don't... A difficult question, because I know how close you were with your gran, but obviously she passed before the World Cup. She didn't get to see you play in that. That must have been really difficult for you, really hard for you?
Yeah, it was very difficult. There's pictures as well, obviously, of me holding up a shirt and stuff. And, you know, we got to the final and we were celebrating and stuff like that. But, yeah, it's just, I don't know, it's a weird one because, you know, she never actually came to watch me play anyway. Never been to watch me.
Really?
Never been to watch me play. She used to sit in the living room on the sofa, radio there, and just listen to it on the radio. It's just the way that she liked to do it. It's just the way that she always liked to do it. I don't know. I don't know why she did it, because I just feel like she felt a lot more comfortable in her own living room, being able to scream and tell somebody to F off if they were doing a reading on the radio or whatever. And she used to like listening to Adam Pope as well on Leeds Radio. So she was very fond of Adam Pope. So she just listened to him.
I don't know, like, I like listening to Five Live as much as the next man.
Yeah.
But if I had like an unlimited supply of free tickets,
yeah,
I would probably be taking your
horse. It's just a way, maybe she didn't like me watching me play football. And I don't know.
I know some people's parents do get funny about watching it.
My mum used to be really bad. She used to be really bad when she used to watch me play football. She used to, like she'd get like a short spell of like Tourette's, and she'd be like, jumping, she'd be swearing, and she'd have to tell, oh, sorry, I'm so sorry, like the people sat next to her, because she'd like moving around and stuff. But some people, they enjoy it, some people don't.
It's the emotion, isn't it? I guess, and you know, you're obviously so proud as a parent to see your kid out there.
Yeah.
I can't imagine like what it does to you. You're just trying to like keep your lid on and like do it okay, you know.
I won't be able to do it.
Yeah.
I won't.
You don't think you'd go?
I'd be able to go.
Would you want your kids to play?
Yeah, I'd love my kids to play, to be fair. I'd want to go and I'd want to watch them. But I think if I seen another kid try and clatter my kid, I'd be like, where's your dad?
See you in the car. For the Euros 2020, you know, we saw three members of the squad, Rashford, Sancho, Saka,
mm-hmm.
receive racial abuse after the final.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly on social media, it has to be said.
Yeah.
You condemned it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
How important is it to have that sense of solidarity between the players, you know, when something like that happens, to sort of stand up and say that it's wrong?
I think it's really important, not just for the players to say it as well, but like the whole of England, you know, to come out, the FA and stuff, to come out and say and condemn it all. I think it was just to show, you know, support for them and show that, you know, they have got people who are, you know, looking out for them and, you know, want to make sure they feel all right about everything, even though, you know, it's probably the worst few weeks of your life
mm-hmm.
at the time. And, you know, I can't imagine what all three of them would have gone through. So, you know, for me, it was just, you know, to show, you know, that I support them and, you know, the great lads as well. And, you know, for them to be racially abused after giving everything for their country, you know, I think it was definitely out of order, but...
it's rotten, isn't it?
Yeah, it's so annoying. And it's one of the main reasons why I came out of sport too was, you know, just to educate young kids as well, you know, that it's not the right thing to do. And, you know, if I can stop one kid from being racist, and, you know, hopefully it goes on and goes on and goes on. So
it's worth doing, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course it is. You said to the Yorkshire Evening Post, this is a quote, that not many people know that you're black, but some of your friends and family, and again a quote, can't even walk down the street without being given a dirty look or worse.
Mm-hmm.
How has sort of colourism, that kind of prejudice between, you know, someone who's darker skinned and someone lighter skinned, how did that factor in? Well, not just your experience, but also sort of post-tournament for you. Did it make things easier because you weren't getting as much stick as perhaps some of the other guys were? Or did it make it harder because, you know, you got the same experience, but you're not being as abused as badly? Maybe it makes you feel, I don't know, I don't want to put words in your mouth, guilty or...
No, yeah, you hit the nail on the head. It makes you feel worse because, you know, I'm obviously mixed race, so all these lads that are getting stiff, well, why am I not getting stiff? And I feel for them because, you know, just because of the skin colour, they're getting abused because, you know, we didn't win a game. And you know, why, if you're going to abuse, you know, three players, then why not abuse the rest of us? And, you know, I won't say I was lucky in a way not to receive it, but, you know, because people don't know it, that I'm mixed race, and, you know, maybe they just didn't bother with me because they didn't think I was. So it's a weird one, it really is, and it's a proper weird one, but
it kind of highlights how stupid it is as well.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's so, I don't even know the word to it. It's so stupid. It's
ignorant.
Yeah, ignorant. It's just so ignorant, and that's why I just don't understand. It's just,
yeah. Well, let's not spend too much time talking about this nasty stuff, because there's good stuff here as well. So, just one last question on England, which I've always wondered, sort of, you know, like I said earlier, you think about when you're younger, like playing sport for your country, what it feels like to be out on the pitch, national anthem or whatever, you're stood there with the jersey on. Could you try and describe that feeling for me?
No. It's so hard. I think, obviously, you know, one of my first games and stuff, I was very nervous, but then during the Euros, I was just loving every minute of it. I was loving, you know, just being around the boys, watching the country come together to support us, and you know, more fans were all started being allowed back into the stadium and stuff. And even for the World Cup, you know, I wasn't involved in the World Cup as much as what I'd like to be because of my injuries. But the atmosphere at the Wales game was unbelievable. It was unbelievable, and you get goosebumps. You know, when you stood there and the national anthem and stuff, you just get goosebumps. And you know, some of that every young kid, you know, dreams of doing is playing for the country, and especially that I woke up.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, hopefully, you know, we've got the Euros in a year's time, so hopefully I'm doing that again.
Well, it's been, you know, because it's not just with England as well, right? You know, the season City have had,
mm-hmm.
winning the treble, and like you mentioned, because of your injuries, mm-hmm. you know, not being able to play as much of a part as you would have liked. It must be sort of quite surreal sitting there. I don't know whether it's at the parade or, mm-hmm. you know, even just at the games, watching all this success, this like footballing history happening mm-hmm. around you and not being able to take part in it.
Yeah, at the start of the season, you know, when I was injured and stuff, it didn't really cross my mind. And then, you know, when I was coming back to fitness and, you know, I still weren't playing, then it kind of went through a patch where I was like really struggling, and I was like, you know, wanting a great mood, and you know, maybe I'd go out to train and not do my best because I was pissed off at something, or felt like I could have been involved or whatever. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it's like, you know, it's a manager's decision, so you just got to keep on going, got to keep your head down, keep working hard. And I feel like, you know, once I got past that stage, so that stage for me, I'd say it was, we played Leicester at home, and I come on for like the last 30 minutes or something, and I did so bad. I was like so bad. Don't know whether it's because my confidence or whatever, but I was so bad. I can remember going home and I physically cried because I felt like, you know, the manager's given me the chances and I'm not taking them, and I'm not producing what, you know, I know that I'm capable of. And yeah, that's when I decided to message Bielsa and, you know, talk to a familiar face, and messaged him asking if I could speak to him, and, you know, told him how I felt, and he just said it's literally all down to confidence, it's all down to the way that you are, and there's no doubt you've got the ability, you just need to be confident in yourself. And you know, if you're gonna stay at Manchester City, then you got to show that you're confident in yourself. And you know, I think after that phone call, I just thought, right, and every day I go in now, I'm just going to be a happy, positive mood all the time. And I feel like after that point, you know, started getting more confident, but then the rewards started coming, we started winning more games, and I just felt like it's like a momentum. We went on like a 25 unbeaten run, and, you know, beat Arsenal, who was unbelievable all season, to the league, and then beat United in the final, and then the last game into Milan, you know, all while my family are, you know, enjoying this at the same time. I'm obviously enjoying it, thinking, you know, even though I'm not playing and I'm not involved as much, I'm so happy for, you know, everyone that's involved, because it's history at the end of the day, and it's something that nobody can ever take away from you. So, you know, I just you know, got in that positive frame of mind where no matter if I played or not, I was always going to be there for whoever needed me. So,
you still in that frame of mind now? How do you feel?
Yeah, really good.
Yeah?
Yeah, I do, yeah. I'm just just buzzing for the season to start, to be honest. I want to go to pre-season and work hard and get to see the boys again, and then, yeah, season start.
I know it's not the same thing, so it's like compare these achievements is sort of like a bit of a fool's errand, but when you talk about like winning the Champions League, winning the FA Cup, winning the Premier League, incredible achievements.
Mm-hmm.
You also saw Leeds go up into the Premier League.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not asking you to say if one or the other is better, but how do they compare to each other?
I think for me, just because, you know, I'm a Leeds boy and, you know, I played for Leeds for so many years and all my really close friends was at Leeds. I've been there for years. I've made so many friends. And when we got promoted, that was an unbelievable feeling. It was like just a feeling you can't explain because, you know, we had an amazing season that year and, you know, it was hit with COVID and then everything was just going on and it was just weird. And then, you know, to finally, you know, get us over the line was unbelievable. And I think, you know, that's definitely one of the best moments of my life so far, is getting Leeds promoted. And then obviously the next best moment was the parade after we won the treble. That parade was crazy.
Yeah.
It was so good. And do you know what made it better? The weather.
The rain?
Yeah. It was mental. Because so we went out and obviously we didn't expect it to start raining. Everyone were like umbrellas and stuff. We don't want it to rain, don't we? And then it just started blashing it down and everyone tops off, swinging the tops around and stuff. It was just mental. It was so good.
Amazing. Amazing. My last question, it's about your best pal again. That quote Liam gave, you know, we've talked a lot about money. We talked about success. And that quote right at the beginning from him, you know, Calvin has never let the football, the fame, the money get on top of him. Why is that?
I don't know. It's just how I've always grown up. I'd probably say it's down to my family. How they've raised me and how my mum is, how my grandma was. Just something that I'd never let happen. And, you know, I'm just a normal person at the end of the day, like I'm a footballer, but, you know, you speak to me, I'm so normal. It's ridiculous. So, yeah, I don't know. It's a mad question.
You must look back and think, what on earth is going on here?
Yeah, all the time. But yeah, I think, you know, I'm just a humble person. I just understand that being a humble person, being a good person and helping others when they need help or anything like that, it eventually comes back and it's good to you. So,
and not forgetting where you came from.
Exactly, 100%.
Calvin Phillips, thank you so much.
Thank you, mate. Cheers, it's been a pleasure.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.